You are sure it is Arthas Menethil, the prince? Kelmarin nodded, still catching his breath. Aye, my lady. I heard him called so by those who served him. I do not think the rumors painting him as the slayer of his father and the instigator of the troubles in Lordaeron are exaggerations, from what I have seen. Sylvanas listened, her blue eyes widening, as the scout spun a tale that sounded too fantastical to be believed. Risen corpses, both fresh and desiccated. Enormous, mindless patchwork creations of various body parts. Strange beasts who could fly and look like stone creations come to life. Giant spider-like beings that reminded her of tales of the thought-vanished Akir. And the smell. Kelmarin, who was not given to exaggeration, spoke in halting tones about the reek that preceded the army. The forests, the first bastion of defense of the land, were falling beneath the strange engines of war he had brought with him. Sylvanas thought back to the red dragons, which had set the woods aflame not so very long ago. Silvermoon had endured, of course, but the woodlands had suffered terribly, as they were suffering now. My lady, Kelmarin finished, lifting his head and giving her a stricken gaze, if he breaks through, I do not think we have the numbers to defeat him. The bitter statement gave her the anger she needed. We are Queldor Ai, she snapped, straightening. Our land is impregnable. He will not enter. Do not fear. He must first know how to break the enchantments that protect Quel'Thalas. Then he must be able to do so. Better and wiser foes than he have tried to take our realm ere now. Have faith, my friend, in the Sunwell's strength, and in the strength and will of our people. As Kelmarin was led off to where he could drink and eat and recover before returning to his post, Sylvanas turned to her rangers. I would see this human prince for myself. Summon the first battle units. If Kelmarin is correct, we should prepare for a preemptive strike. Sylvanas lay atop the great gate that, along with the jagged ring of mountains, helped protect her land. She wore full but comfortable leather armor, and her bow was slung across her back. She and Shaldaris and Vorathil, the other two scouts who had gone on ahead and had waited for her to come with the bulk of the rangers, stared aghast. As Kelmarin had warned, they had smelled the reek of the decaying army long before they had seen them. Prince Arthas rode atop a skeletal horse with fiery eyes, a huge sword that she recognized at once as a rune blade strapped to his back. Humans in dark clothing scurried to obey his commands. So did the dead. Sylvanas choked back bile as her gaze roved over the collection of various rotting corpses, and she was silently thankful that the wind had shifted and was now blowing the stench away from her. She signaled her plan, long fingers moving quickly, and the scouts nodded. They slipped back, silent as shadows, and Sylvanas turned her eyes toward Arthas. He did not seem to have noticed anything. He looked human still, though pale, and his hair was white instead of golden, as she recalled it had been described to her. How then could he stand this? Being surrounded by the dead, the horrible stench, the grotesque images. She shuddered and instructed herself to focus. The undead who obeyed him simply stood, awaiting orders. The humans, necromancers, Sylvanas thought, a wave of loathing rushing through her, were too busy creating new monstrosities to post lookouts. They could not conceive of defeat. Their arrogance would be their undoing. She waited, watching, until her archers were in position. Forewarned by Kelmarin, she had summoned fully 2/3 of her rangers. She believed firmly that Arthas could not breach the magical elf gates that protected Quel'Thalas. There was too much he could not possibly know about them to do so. Still, she had also not believed things that her eyes now told her was truth. Better to wipe out the threat here and now. She glanced at Sheldaris and Vorathil. They caught her gaze and nodded. They were ready. Sylvanas yearned to simply strike, to take the enemy unawares, but honor forbade it. There would be no tales sung of how Ranger General Sylvanas Windrunner defended her homeland by underhanded means. "For Quel'Thalas," she whispered underneath her breath, and then stood.
"You are not welcome here," she cried, her voice clear and musical and strong.
Arthas turned his skeletal steed. Sylvanas spared a moment to pity the poor beast, and faced her, peering at her intently. The necromancers fell silent, turning to their lord, awaiting instructions.
"I am Sylvanas Windrunner, Ranger General of Silvermoon. I advise you to turn back now."
Arthas's lips, gray, she noticed, gray in a white face, although she knew somehow he yet lived, curled back in a smile. He was amused.
"It is you who should turn back, Sylvanas," he said, deliberately omitting her title.
His voice would have been a pleasant baritone had it not been underscored by something. Something that made even her fierce heart stop for a moment as she heard it. She forced herself not to shiver.
"Death itself has come to your land."
Her blue eyes narrowed.
"Do your worst," she challenged. "The elf gate to the inner kingdom is protected by our most powerful enchantments. You shall not pass."
She knocked her bow, the signal for the attack. An instant later, the air was filled with the sudden hum of dozens of arrows in flight. Sylvanas had taken aim for the human, or once human, prince, and her aim was as true as ever. The arrow sang as it sped toward Arthas's unprotected head. But an instant before it struck, she saw a flash of blue-white. Sylvanas stared. More swiftly than she could fathom, Arthas had brought up his sword, the runes in it emitting that cold blue-white glow, and sliced the arrow in two. He grinned at her and winked.
"To battle, my troops! Slay them all, that they may serve me and my lord," Arthas cried.
His voice echoed with that strange thrum of power. She growled deep in her throat and took aim again. But he was in motion now, the dead horse bearing him with unnatural swiftness, and she realized that his horrific troops were on the offensive now. She thought of a swarm of insects as they converged, perfect in their mindless unity, upon her rangers. The archers had their instructions. Cut down the living first, and then dispatch the dead with arrows set aflame. The first volley of arrows dropped nearly every single one of the cultists. The second saw dozens of blazing arrows embedded in the walking corpses. But even as they stumbled about, some of them almost tinder dry, others moist and rotting, the sheer number of them began to turn the tide. They somehow managed to scramble up the nearly vertical walls of earth and stone where her rangers were positioned. Some of them, mercifully, were too decayed to get far, their rotting limbs ripping from their bodies and causing them to fall. But the fall did not halt them. They pressed onward, upward, toward her rangers, who now had to wield swords instead of arrows. They were trained warriors, of course, and could fight in close quarters. Fight against foes who could be slowed by the loss of blood or limbs. But against these, dead hands, more like claws than fingers, reached out to Sheldaris. Grim-faced, the red-haired ranger fought fiercely, her lips moving in cries of defiance that Sylvanas could not hear. But they were closing in on her, wringing her, and Sylvanas felt a deep pain as she watched Sheldaris fall beneath them. She drew and fired, almost quicker than thought, focusing on her duty. Out of the corner of her eye,
she saw one of the grotesque winged creatures, its skin gray and appearing as hard as stone, swoop down within 10 feet of her. Its bat-like face snarled in glee as it reached down, and as easily as she might pluck ripe fruit from the tree, snatched Vorathil and bore him aloft. Its fingers dug deeply into the scout's shoulders, and blood spattered on Sylvanas as the thing swooped upward with its prize. Vorathil struggled in the creature's grasp, his fingers finding and freeing a dagger. Sylvanas turned her aim from the groaning undead below her to the monstrosity above. She fired right at the creature's neck. The arrow glanced off harmlessly. The creature tossed its head and snarled, tired of toying with Vorathil. It lifted one hand and raked its claws across the scout's throat, then dropped him carelessly and circled back for more. Grieving silently, Sylvanas watched her friend fall lifeless to the earth, his body striking the pile of dead cultists her rangers had slain moments earlier. And then she gasped. The cultists were moving. Arrows protruding from their bodies, sometimes over a dozen brightly fletched missiles in a single corpse, and yet they stirred. "No," she whispered, sickened. Her horrified gaze went to Arthas. The prince was looking straight at her, grinning that damnable grin. One powerful, gauntleted hand grasped the rune blade. The other was lifted in a beckoning gesture, and as she watched, yet another slain human stirred and shambled to its feet, pulling out the arrow from its eye, as if it were plucking a burr from its clothing. Her attack had cost Arthas nothing. Any who fell would be raised by his dark magic. He saw the realization and the anger in her eyes, and the grin turned into a laugh. "I did try to tell you," he cried, his voice rising above the din of battle, "and still you provide me with new recruits." He gestured again, and another body twitched as it was hauled upward and forced to stand on its feet. A body that had been slender but muscular, with long black hair swept back in a ponytail, with tanned skin and pointed ears. Blood still ran in red rivulets from the 4 scores in its throat, and the head bobbed erratically, as if the neck had been too badly damaged to support it much longer. Dead eyes that had once been blue as summer skies sought out Sylvanas, and then, slowly at first, it began to move toward her. Vorathil. At that moment, she felt the gate beneath her shudder ever so slightly. So distracted had she been by the slaughter and reanimation of things that ought to stay dead, that she had not noticed his siege engines maneuvering into position. The ogre-sized things that appeared to be comprised of various different corpses were battering away at the gate as well. So were the enormous, spider-like creatures. Then something hit the wall with a soft, plopping sound. Wetness spattered Sylvanas. For a fraction of a second, her mind refused to accept what she had just witnessed, and then clarity broke upon her. Arthas was not only raising the corpses of the fallen elves, he was hurling their bodies, or pieces of them, back at Sylvanas as ammunition. Sylvanas swallowed hard, then issued the order that a few moments ago she never would have dreamed she would utter. "Shindu Falana! Fall back to the second gate! Fall back!" Those who were left, piteous few there were still, at least still alive and fighting under her command, obeyed at once, gathering up the wounded and slinging them over their shoulders, their faces pale and sweat-streaked, and reflecting the same forcibly contained terror that raced through her. They fled. There was no other word for it. This was no orderly, synchronized, martial retreat, but an all-out flight. Sylvanas ran with the rest of them, bearing the wounded as best she could, and her mind was racing. Behind her, she heard the once inconceivable sound of the gate cracking and the roar of the undead as they howled their triumph. Her own heart seemed to crack in agony. He had done it. But how? How? His voice, strong, resonant, with that undercurrent of something dark and terrible, rose over the noise. "The Elf Gate has fallen! Onward, my warriors! Onward to victory!" Somehow, to Sylvanas, the worst, most awful thing about that gleeful, gloating cry was the affection that laced through it. She seized the sleeve of a young man racing beside her.
"Telkor," Sylvanas cried, "make for the Sunwell Plateau. Tell them what we have seen here. Tell them to be prepared."
Telkor was young enough to let disappointment flicker over his handsome features at the thought of not standing to fight, but he nodded his golden head in comprehension. Sylvanas hesitated.
"My lady, tell them. We may have been betrayed."
Telkor blanched at that, but nodded. Like an arrow shot from a bow, he raced away. He was a good archer, but Sylvanas did not suffer any illusion that one more bow would make a difference in the battle that was to come. But if the Magi who controlled and directed the Sunwell's energies knew what they faced, that might. They were racing northward now, and as her troops crossed a bridge, she suddenly stopped in mid-run, whirled on her heel, and looked back. Sylvanas gasped. That Arthas and his dark army were coming, she expected to see. That would have been a horrific enough sight. The undead, the abominations, the flying bat-like things, the grotesque spidery beings, hundreds bearing down with implacable determination. What she did not expect to see was what they left in their wake. Like a trail left by a slug, like a furrow left by a plow, the land where the undead feet had trod was blackened and barren. Worse, Sylvanas remembered the burned woods the orcs had left behind, knew that nature would eventually reclaim it. This, it was a horrible, dark line of death, as if the unnatural energies that were used to propel the corpses forward were killing the very earth upon which they shambled. Poison. They were poison. It was dark magic of the foulest kind. And it had to be stopped. She had paused only an instant, although to her it felt as though she had been frozen in place for a lifetime.
"Hold!" she cried, her voice clear and strong and purposeful. "We will make our stand here."
They were puzzled only briefly, then they understood. Quickly she spoke instructions, and they leaped to obey. Many of them paused, shocked, as they caught their first stunned glimpse of the grievous wound to the land that had so horrified their ranger general, but they recovered quickly. Time enough to worry about healing the brutalized earth later. For now, they had to stop that dreadful scar from spreading. The stench preceded the army, but Sylvanas and her rangers now had a grim familiarity with it. It did not unnerve them as it had before. She stood on the bridge, her head held high, her black hood slipping a little to show bright golden hair. The army of the dead slowed and halted, confused by the sight. The ugly wagons, catapults, and trebuchets rumbled to a halt. Arthas's skeletal horse reared, and he reached down and stroked the bony neck as if it were a living beast. Sylvanas felt a shiver of nausea at the wrongness of the tableau, as the thing responded to its master's touch.
"Goodness," Arthur said, humor lacing the word with something akin to warmth. "This can't be one of the oh-so-imposing elf gates I've heard so much about."
Sylvanas forced herself to grin back.
"No, not quite. But you'll still find it a challenge."
"It is but a simple bridge, my lady. But then again,
The elves are very fond of putting paper manes on cats and calling them lions.
She eyed his army for a moment, her anger penetrating her forced smugness.
You've won through this gate, Butcher, but you won't get through the second. The inner gate to Silvermoon can only be opened with a special key, and it shall never be yours.
She nodded to her companions, and they raced across the bridge to join their fellows on the other side. Arthas's humor faded, and his pale eyes flashed. His gauntleted hand tightened on the rune blade. Its markings thrummed.
You waste your time, woman. You cannot outrun the inevitable. Though I admit, it is amusing to watch you scurry.
Now Sylvanas did laugh, an angry, satisfied sound that rolled up from some place deep in her soul.
You think I'm running from you? Apparently, you've never fought elves before.
Some things, she mused, were deliciously simple. Sylvanas lifted her hand, threw the extremely non-magical, quite practical incendiary device, then turned to run as the bridge exploded. The trees welcomed them, arching above them in hues of gold and silver, hiding them from their enemy. Before she faded from earshot, she heard something that made her grin fiercely.
The ranger woman is starting to vex me greatly.
Yes, vex you, harry you, like a sparrow does the hawk. The Elrindar bisects Eversong Woods, and you will find no crossing for your monstrous engines of war any time soon. She knew it was a delay, nothing more. But if the army was delayed long enough, perhaps she could get a message through. Worry fluttered at her mind. Arthas had seemed supremely confident that he would be able to defeat the magic that powered the elf gates. He had already shown some knowledge, and that he had been able to destroy the first gate. Of course, the first gate was not as magically defended as the second. And from what she had seen, arrogance seemed to be his normal state, but was it possible? The nagging uncertainty that had prompted her to add a final warning to Telkor's message to the Magi stirred within her again. Did Arthas know about the key?
Chapter 19 The Traitor, a wizard, by the name of Darkon Drathir, should have made it easy. And to some extent he had, of course. Arthas would otherwise never have known about the Key of the Three Moons, a magical item that had been split into three separate moon crystals stashed in heavily guarded, hidden locations throughout Quel'Thalas. Each temple was constructed on an intersection of ley lines, similar to the Sunwell itself, the traitor's elf had told him, gleeful to be betraying his people so. The ley lines were like blood vessels of the earth, carrying magic instead of scarlet fluid. Thus interconnected, the crystals created a field of energy known as Bandinoriel, the gatekeeper. All he needed to do was find these sites at Antalas, Andaroth, and Anoen, slay the guards, and find the moon crystals. But the excessively pretty, surprisingly tough elves presented a challenge. Arthas sat astride Invincible, idly fingering Frostmourne, and reflected on how it was that so fragile-seeming a race could stand up to his army. For army now it truly was, many hundreds of soldiers, all already dead, and so more difficult to permanently dispatch. The ranger general's clever little trick of blowing up the bridge had indeed cost Arthas precious time. The river ran through Quel'Thalas until it bumped up against several foothills to the east, foothills that posed the same challenge to the mobility of his engines of war that the water did. It had taken a while, but eventually they had crossed the river. As he pondered the solution, something had twinged at the back of his mind, a tingling sensation he couldn't quite figure out. Annoyed, he dismissed the strange sensation and instructed several of his unfailingly loyal soldiers
to create their own bridge, a bridge made of rotting flesh. Dozens of them waded into the river and simply lay there, forming layer upon layer of corpses, until there were enough of them that the meat wagons, catapults, and trebuchets could make their lurching way across. Some of the undead, of course, were no longer of use, their bodies too broken or torn to hold cohesion. These, Arthas almost gently released from his control, granting them true death. Besides, their bodies would foul the purity of the river. It was an additional weapon. He, of course, could and did cross easily. Invincible plunged without hesitation into the water, and Arthas was abruptly reminded of the horse's fatal jump in the middle of winter, slipping on the icy rocks as he leaped, utterly obedient to the will of his master then, as now. The memory crashed on him unexpectedly, and for a moment he couldn't breathe as pain and guilt washed over him. It was gone as quickly as it had come. Everything was better now. He was no longer an emotionally shattered child, racked by guilt and shame, sobbing in the snow as he lifted his sword to pierce the heart of a loyal friend. No, nor was Invincible a mere living creature, to be harmed by such a thing. They were both more powerful now, stronger. Invincible would exist forever, serving his master as he had always done. He would not know thirst or pain or hunger or exhaustion. And he, Arthas, would take what he wished when he wished it. There was no more silent disapproval from his father, no more scolding from the too pious Uther, no more dubious glances from Jaina, her brow furrowed in that dearly familiar expression of, "Jaina." Arthas shook his head sharply. Jaina had had her chance to join with him. She had refused, denied him, although she had sworn she would never do so. He owed her nothing. Only the Lich King commanded him now. The mental shift calmed him, and Arthas smiled and patted the jutting vertebrae of the undead beast, who tossed his bony head in response. Surely it was the beautiful and willful Ranger General who had unsettled him and made him question, even momentarily, the wisdom of his path. She, too, had had her chance. Arthas had come for a purpose, and that purpose had not been to obliterate Quel'Thalas and its populace. Had they not resisted him, he would have let them be. Her sharp tongue and defiant behavior had brought her people's doom upon them, not he. The water seeped in through the joins of his armor, and the breeches, shirt, and gambeson he wore beneath the metal plate grew wet and cold. Arthas did not feel it. A moment later, Invincible surged forward, clambering out onto the opposite bank. The last of the meat wagons rumbled onto the bank as well, and what corpses were sufficiently intact slogged onto land. The rest lay where they had fallen, the once crystal-clear water flowing over and around them. "Onward," the Death Knight said. The rangers had retreated to Fairbreeze Village. Once the shock had passed, the citizens did everything they could, from tending the wounded to offering what weapons and skills they had. Sylvanas ordered those who could not fight to head to Silvermoon as quickly as possible. "Take nothing," she said as a woman nodded and hurried to ascend the ramp to an upper area. "But our rooms upstairs have—" Sylvanas whirled, her eyes flaring. "Do you not yet understand? The dead are marching upon us. They do not tire, they do not slow, and they take our fallen and add them to their ranks. We have delayed them, little more. Take your family and go." The woman seemed taken aback by the Ranger General's response, but obeyed, wasting only a few moments rounding up her family before hastening down the road to the capital. Arthas would not be stopped for long. Sylvanas cast a sweeping, appraising glance over the wounded. None of them could stay here. They, too, would need to be evacuated to Silvermoon. As for those who were still hale, few though they were, She would need to ask yet more from them, perhaps everything they had. They, like she, had sworn to defend their people. Now was the day of reckoning. There was a spire close by, between the Elrondar and Silvermoon. Somehow, she felt certain Arthas would find a way to cross and continue his march. Continue to wound the land with the purplish black scar. The spire would be a good place to mount a defense. The ramps were narrow, preventing the crush of undead that had been so disastrous previously. And there were several stories to the building, all open to the air. She and her archers could do a great deal of damage before they were. Sylvanas Windrunner, Ranger General of Silvermoon, took a calming breath, dashed water on her heated face, drank a deep draught of the soothing liquid, and rose to prepare the uninjured and walking wounded for what would, no doubt, be their final battle. They were almost too late. Even as the rangers marched on the spire that would be their bastion, the air, once so sweet and fresh, was tainted with the sickly odor of putrefaction. Overhead, mounted archers hovered on their dragon hawks. The great creatures, golden and scarlet, stretched their serpentine heads against the reins unhappily. They too scented death, and it disturbed them. Never had the beautiful beasts been pressed into such a ghastly service. One of the riders signaled Sylvanas, and she signaled back. "The undead have been sighted," she told her troops calmly. They nodded. "Positions. Hurry." Like a well-oiled gnomish machine, they obeyed. The Dragonhawk riders surged south, toward the approaching enemy. A unit of archers and hand-to-hand fighters hurried forward as well, the first line of defense. Her finest archers raced up the curving ramps of the spire. The rest spread out at the base of the structure. They did not have long to wait. If she had harbored any faint hope that somehow the numbers of the enemy might have suffered from the delay, it was dashed like fine crystal falling to a stone floor. She could glimpse the hideous vanguard now, rotting undead, followed by skeletons and the huge abominations whose three arms each carried massive weapons. Above them flew the stone-like creatures wheeling like buzzards. "They are breaking through." How strange the mind was, Sylvanas thought with a trace of macabre humor. Now, as the hour of her death doubtless approached, an ancient song played in her head, one she and her siblings had loved to sing when the world was right and they were all together. Alaria, Verisa, and their youngest brother Lyrith, at twilight, when soft lavender shadows spread their gentle cloaks and the sweet scent of the ocean and flowers wafted across the land. "Anarala, Anarala Belore, Queldorai, Shindu Falana, by the light of the sun, high elves, our enemies are breaking through." Without her realizing it at first, her hand fluttered upward to close on the necklace she wore about her slender throat. It had been a gift from her oldest sister, Alaria, delivered not by Alaria herself, but in her stead by one of her lieutenants, Varana. Alaria was gone, vanished through the dark portal, in an attempt to stop the Horde from visiting their atrocities again on Azeroth, and on other worlds as well. She had never returned. She had melted down a necklace given to her by their parents, and made individual necklaces out of the three stones for each of the Windrunner sisters. Sylvanas's was a sapphire. She knew the inscription by heart. "To Sylvanas, love always, Alaria." She waited, grasping the necklace, feeling the connection with her dead sister it always provided, then slowly forced her hand away. Sylvanas took a deep breath and shouted, "Attack! For Quel'Thalas!" There would be no stopping them. In truth, she did not expect to stop them. From the expressions on the grim, bloodied faces around her, Sylvanas realized her rangers knew this as well as she. Sweat dewed her face. Her muscles screamed with exhaustion, and still Sylvanas Windrunner fought. She fired, knocking and releasing and knocking again so swiftly that her hands were almost a blur. When the swarm of corpses and monsters came too close for arrows, she flung her bow away and seized her short sword and dagger. She whirled and turned and stabbed, crying out incoherently as she battled. Another one fell, its head toppling from its shoulders, to be trampled, bursting open like a melon beneath the feet of one of its own. Two more monstrosities surged forward to take its place. Still Sylvanas fought, like one of the savage lynxes of Eversong Woods, channeling her pain and outrage into violence. She would take as many with her as she could before she fell. They are breaking through. They pressed in, close, the reek of decay almost overwhelming her. Too many of them now. Sylvanas did not slow. She would fight until they had utterly destroyed her, until the press of corpses suddenly was gone. They stepped back and stood still. Gasping for breath, Sylvanas looked down the hill. He was there, waiting, on his undead steed. The wind played with his long white hair as he regarded her intently. She straightened, wiping blood and sweat from her face. A paladin, he had been once. Her sister had loved one such as him. Suddenly Sylvanas was fiercely glad that Ilaria was dead, could not see this. Could not see what a former champion of the light was doing to everything the Windrunners loved and cherished. Arthas lifted the glowing rune blade in a formal gesture. I salute your bravery, elf. But the chase is over. Oddly, he sounded like he meant the compliment. Sylvanas swallowed. Her mouth was dry as bone. She tightened her grip on her weapons. Then I'll make my stand here, butcher. Anarala Bellore. His gray lips twitched. As you will, Ranger General. He did not even bother to dismount. Instead, the skeletal steed whinnied and galloped straight toward her. Arthas gripped the reins with his left hand, his right drawing back the massive sword. Sylvanas sobbed once. No cry of fear or regret came from those lips. Only a short, harsh sob of impotent anger, of hatred, of righteous fury that she was not able to stop them, not even when she had given all she could, not even with her life's blood. Ilaria, sister, I come. She met the deadly blade head-on, striking it with her own weapons, which shattered upon impact. And then the rune blade had pierced her. Cold, so cold it was, slicing through her as if it was made of ice itself. Arthas leaned into her, his gaze locked with hers. Sylvanas coughed, fine droplets of blood spattering his bone-pale face. Was it her imagination, or was there a hint of regret on his still fine features? He tugged back his weapon, and she fell, blood gushing out of her. Sylvanas shivered on the cold stone floor, the movement causing agony to rip through her. One hand fluttered, foolishly, to the gaping wound in her abdomen, as if her hands could close on it and stop the flood. Finish it, she whispered. I deserve a clean death. His voice floated to her from somewhere as her eyes closed. After all you've put me through, woman, the last thing I'll give you is the peace of death. Fear spiked in her for a heartbeat, then faded as everything else was beginning to. He would raise her as one of those grotesque, shambling things? No, she murmured, her voice sounding as if it came from a long way off. You wouldn't dare. And then it went away. It all went away. The coldness, the stench, the searing pain. It was soft and warm and dark and calm and comforting, and Sylvanas permitted herself to sink into the welcoming darkness. At last she could rest, could lay down the arms she had borne for so long in service to her people. And then, agony shot through her. Agony such as she had never known, and Sylvanas suddenly knew that no physical pain she had ever endured could hold a pale candle to this torment. This was an agony of the spirit, of her soul leaving her lifeless form and being trapped, of a ripping, tearing, yanking back from that warm sanctuary of silence and stillness. The violence of the act added to the exquisite torment, and Sylvanas felt a scream welling up, forcing its way from deep inside, past lips that somehow she knew were no longer physical, a deep, keening wail of a suffering that was not hers alone, that froze blood and stopped hearts. The blackness faded from her vision, but colors did not return. She did not need reds or blues or yellows to see him, though, her tormentor. He was white and gray and black, even in a world with color. The rune blade that had taken her life, had taken and consumed her soul, glittered and gleamed. And Arthas's free hand was lifted in a beckoning gesture as he ripped her from the soothing embrace of death. Banshee, he told her. Thus I have made you. You can give voice to your pain, Sylvanas. I will give you that much. It is more than the others get. And in so doing, you shall cause pain to others. So now you, troublesome ranger, shall serve. Terrified beyond reason, Sylvanas hovered over her bloodied, broken corpse, gazing into her own staring eyes, then back at Arthas. No, she said, her voice hollow and eerie, yet still recognizably hers. I will never serve you, butcher. He gestured. It was the merest thing, a twitch of a gauntleted finger. Her back arched in agony, and another scream was torn from her, and she realized, with a racking, raging sense of grief, that she was utterly powerless before him. She was his tool, as the rotting corpses and the pale, reeking abominations were his tools. Your rangers serve as well, he said. They are now in my army. He hesitated, and there was genuine regret in his voice when he said, It did not have to be this way. Know that your fate, theirs, and that of your people, rests upon your choices. But I must press on to the Sunwell, and you will assist me. The hate grew inside Sylvanas like a living thing in her incorporeal body. She floated beside him, his shiny new toy, her body gathered up and flung on one of the meat wagons, to who knew what sick end Arthas could devise. As if there was a thread that bound her to him, she never was more than a few feet away from the death knight, and she was beginning to hear the whispers. At first, Sylvanas wondered if she was insane in this new, abhorrent incarnation. But it soon became apparent that even the refuge of the mad was denied her. The voice in her mind was unintelligible at first, and in her wretched state she did not wish to hear. But soon she understood to whom it belonged. Arthas kept giving her sidelong glances as he continued his inexorable march to Silvermoon and beyond, watching her closely. At one point, as this army of which she was a captive part surged forward, destroying the land as it passed, she heard it very clearly. For my glory, you will serve, Sylvanas. For the dead, you will toil.
For obedience you will hunger. Arthas is the first and most beloved of my Death Knights. He will command you forever, and you will find it joyous. Arthas saw her shiver, and he smiled. If she had thought she despised him when she first beheld him outside the gates of Quel'Thalas, when the wondrous land within was still clean and pure, and had not known the killing touch, if she had thought she hated him as his minions slew her people and raised them to become lifeless puppets, and when he impaled her in a single, savage blow with the monstrous rune blade, it was as nothing to what she felt now. A candle to a sun, a whisper to a banshee's scream. Never, she told the voice in her head. He directs my actions, but Arthas cannot break my will. The only answer was hollow, cold laughter. On they pushed, past Fairbreeze village and the East Sanctum. At the gates of Silvermoon itself, they halted. Arthas' voice should not have carried as it did, but Sylvanas knew that it was heard in every corner of the city as he stood in front of the gates. Citizens of Silvermoon, I have given you ample opportunities to surrender, but you have stubbornly refused. Know that today, your entire race and your ancient heritage will end. Death itself has come to claim the high home of the elves. She, Ranger General Sylvanas Windrunner, was paraded in front of her people as an example of what would happen to them if they did not surrender. They did not, and she loved them fiercely for it, even as she was pressed into service by her dark master. And so it fell, the shining, beautiful city of magic, its glories shattered and reduced to rubble, as the army of undead, the Scourge, she heard Arthas call them, twisted affection in his voice, pressed on. As he had before, Arthas raised the fallen to serve, and if Sylvanas had still possessed a heart, it would have broken at the sight of so many friends and loved ones shambling beside her, mindlessly obedient. On through the city they marched, cleaving it in twain with the vile purple-black scar, its citizens lurching to their feet with wounds that had smashed skulls, or trailing viscera behind them as they shambled forward. She had hoped the channel between Silvermoon and Quel'Thalas would prove an impassable barrier, and for a moment that hope seemed realized. Arthas drew rein, staring at the blue water glinting in the sun, and frowned. For a moment he sat atop his unnatural steed, his white brows knitted together. You cannot fill this channel with corpses, Arthas, Sylvanas had gloated. Not even the whole city would be enough. You are stopped here, and your failure is sweet. And then the being who had once been human, who had once by all accounts been a good man, turned and grinned at her blistering words of defiance, sending her into a paroxysm of agony and wrenching another soul-splitting scream from her incorporeal lips. He had found a solution. He cast Frostmourne toward the shore, watching it almost rapturously as it flipped end over end to land with its tip impaled in the sand. Frostmourne speaks. Sylvanas heard it too, the voice of the Lich King emanating from the unholy weapon, as before her shocked gaze, the water lapping at its rune-inscribed blade began to turn to ice. Ice that his weapons and his warriors could cross. He took her life. He took her beloved Quel'Thalas and Silvermoon. Then he took her king before the final violation. They had resisted on Quel'Thalas, resisted with all they had in them. When Anastarion appeared before Arthas, his fiery magics wreaked havoc on the Death Knight's icy bridge,
but Arthas recovered. He frowned, his eyes flashing, drew Frostborn, and bore down upon the Elven King. Even as she hoped desperately that Anastarion would defeat Arthas, Sylvanas knew he would not. 3 millennia rested upon those shoulders. The white hue of hair that fell almost to his feet was due to age, not dark magic. He had been a powerful fighter once, and was still a powerful mage, but to her new spectral sight, there was a frailty about him she had not seen when she breathed. Still, he stood, his ancient weapon, Felomelorn, Flamestrike, in one hand, a staff with a powerful, glittering crystal, in the other. Arthas struck, but Anastarion was no longer standing in front of the charging steed. Somehow, faster than Sylvanas could see, he was kneeling, swinging Felomelorn in a clean horizontal strike across the horse's forelegs, severing both of them. The horse shrieked and fell, its rider with it.
"Invincible!"
Arthas cried, seeming stricken as the undead horse rolled and tried to get to its feet while missing its 2 forelegs. It seemed an odd battle cry to Sylvanas, considering Anastarion had just gained an advantage. But the face Arthas turned toward the Elven King was full of naked rage and pain. He looked almost human now, a human male seeing something he loved in torment. He scrambled to his feet, glancing back distractedly at the horse. And for a wild moment, Sylvanas thought, maybe, just maybe. The ancient Elven weapon was no match for the Runeblade, as Sylvanas knew it would not, could not be. It snapped as the blades clashed, the severed piece whirling away crazily as Anastarion fell, his soul ripped from him and consumed by the glowing Frostborn, as had been so many others. He sprawled on the ice, limp, blood pooling beneath him, white hair spread out like a shroud, while Arthas rushed to the undead horse and mended its severed legs, patting the bones while it pranced and nuzzled at him. And Sylvanas, although she knew it would harm those she still loved, could not carry the weight of the pain and anguish and sheer burning hatred of Arthas and all he had done. Her head fell back, her arms spreading as her mouth opened, and a cry, beautiful and terrible at once, was torn from an insubstantial throat. She had cried out before, as he had tortured her. But that was only her own pain, her own despair. This was so much more. Torment, agony, yes, but more than that, a hatred so profound as to be almost pure. She heard other cries of pain mingling with hers, saw elves dropping to their knees, clutching ears that began to bleed. Their voices and their spells were stopped, changed from words of magic to incoherent cries of raw grief and startled pain. Some of them fell, their armor shattering and breaking off of them in jagged shards, their very bones breaking beneath their flesh. Even Arthas stared at her for a moment, his white brows drawn together in an appraising gesture. She wanted to stop. She wanted to silence herself, muffle this cry of destruction that only served he whom she hated so passionately. At last it wore down beneath her pain, and Sylvanas, Banshee, fell sickly silent. "What a fine weapon you are indeed," Arthas murmured. "And mayhap you will be a double-edged sword. I will be watching you." The horrible army pressed on. Arthas reached the plateau. He reached it and slew those who guarded the Sunwell, and forced her to participate in the slaughter. And then he visited the ultimate horror upon her people, marching up to the glorious pool of radiance that had sustained the Quel'Dorei for millennia. Beside it, waiting for him, stood a figure Sylvanas recognized, Darkhan Drathir. So, It had been he who had betrayed Quel'Thalas. He who, even more than Arthas, had the blood of thousands upon his well-manicured hands. Fury raged through her. She watched the glow she knew to be golden play upon Arthas's features, softening them and lending them an artificial warmth. Then he upended the contents of an exquisitely crafted urn into the waters, and the radiance changed. It began to pulse and swirl, and inside the swirling center of the damaged magical glow, a shadow. Even after all she had witnessed this dark day, even after what she had become, Sylvanas was stunned at what emerged from the befouled sunwell, rising and lifting its arms to the skies. A skeleton, horned and grinning, its eye sockets burning with fire. Chains snaked around it, and purple vestments fluttered with its movements. "I am reborn, as promised. The Lich King has granted me eternal life." It had all been for this? To raise this single entity? All the slaughter, the torment, the terror, the unspeakably precious and vital Sunwell corrupted, a way of life that had lasted for thousands of years shattered for this. She stared sickly at the cackling lich, and the only thing that gave her even a hint of surcease from the agony was watching Darkon, who had attempted to betray his master as he had betrayed his people, dying, as she had done, from Frostmourne's keen edge. Chapter 20. The cold wind tousled Arthas's white hair, caressed his face, and he smiled. It was good to be again in the colder part of this world. The elven land, with its eternal early summer, heavy with the scents of blossoms and growth, had made him uneasy. It reminded him too much of the gardens of Dalaran, where he had spent so much time with Jaina, of the snapdragons of the Balnir farm. Better the wind to scour him clean, and the coldness to quell those memories. They no longer served him, but weakened him, and there was no room for weakness in the heart of Arthas Menethil. He was, as ever, atop his loyal horse Invincible. He had had a bad moment in Quel'Thalas, when that bastard king Anastarion had cowardly attacked an innocent steed rather than its rider, severing its legs in the same way that in life had caused Invincible's death. The incident had catapulted Arthas back in time to those horrible moments, shaking him to the core, and in the case of the battle with Anastarion, unleashing an icy rage that in the end had served him well. Before and behind him, his army marched through the snowy pass, untiring, unaffected by the cold. Somewhere in among their ghastly number floated a banshee. Arthas would let Sylvanas be for the moment. He was more interested in Kel'Thuzad, who glided beside him almost serenely, if such a word could ever be applied to a lich. He was the one who had directed the scourge to this remote, frozen place, and Arthas had, until now, not questioned. But the trek was getting boring, and he was curious. The prince felt a smile curve his lips. "So," he quipped, "you're not upset about me killing you that one time?" "Don't be foolish," the undead necromancer replied. "The Lich King told me how our encounter would end." That surprised Arthas. "The Lich King knew that I would kill you?" He frowned, glancing down at the blade that stretched across his lap. It was silent now, dormant. No whispers came from it, nor did the runes pulse with power. "Of course," Kel'Thuzad responded, a hint of superiority in his sepulchral voice. "He chose you to be his champion long before the scourge even began." Arthas's unease deepened. No one had asked him, or even told him about his destiny. But would he have embraced it had he known? No, he decided. He did not like being manipulated, but he knew that he had to be tempered if he was to be a formidable weapon. He had to go step by step to his fate.